Okay. Before we start today's sermon, let's take a few moments to worship the Supreme One, the infinitely compassionate One, the winner of his samsara, the conqueror of his defilements, Supreme Buddha. To do so, please recite the Namaskara all together and with me. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. How's Valentine's? Okay, you can spill the tea, you can tell me, right? We went and did this, we went and did that. We went to the monastery. It's funny, isn't it? But like we talked about last week, Valentine's Day is an amazing day for us to remember who has the most amount of love and compassion to the world. So on Valentine's Day, if you went to the Buddha and you offered a flower to the one who had compassion, so much compassion that he was willing to put himself on the line for the salvation of people and beings he has never met before. So that was my Valentine's. How was yours, right? And not only that, I really wanted to also... Expose, I think that's the best word. Expose one of our monastery secrets, and I'll tell you why. It's not a secret per se, because most of you actually know this, but it's a secret for most of you online. And that is, in our monastery, see, when we say secret, we have a feeling, right? Like it's going to be very, very exciting, very, very interesting. And you know, it makes us feel like, okay, come on, please. But apart from that, put that aside. In our monastery, every day we have a midday alms. Midday alms, we have morning alms. And for most of you, you will know that our amazing Sila Shravikas and Shravikas, they come together and they almost do pre-preparation for the alms. However, it is the monks and anagarikas who actually come together and put them all together and make the alms. That is, for almost 365 days, or you can say almost 60 days maybe? Because every couple of months, every 2 to 3 months, we have a day. Oh, no, not a day. Wait, 365 times that by 3. Around 300 and probably around 350 days. But it's because a group of amazing people come together to make alms. For one reason and one reason only. So every 2 to 3 months, our anagarikas, Every the week before an ordination ceremony, they're the ones who make the morning alms for the monks, the anagarikas, shravikas. And what I really wanted to say is how amazing this is. Because, you know, you've probably heard in stories that, you know, back in the time of the Buddha, or before a certain someone had fulfilled their perfections, they made a determination that they want to become, say, the foremost in so-and-so. And so what do? For 7 days, what do? They continuously gave alms. That is exactly what our amazing Anagarikas do. For 7 days, a week before an ordination ceremony, for 7 days, they wake up early in the morning. I know that to prepare alms, for, especially in the morning alms, that some of our monks, Anagarikas, they wake up at, they don't wake up, they don't go to sleep, basically. But it starts at 12. They enter the kitchen at 12 midnight, right? Because, you know, there's lots of people, right? So I do know that the Anagarikas probably wake up really early to prepare this. Our monks and Anagarikas were very fortunate to have the Sila Shravaka and Shravikas to help us with the pre-preparations. I don't think you had any help, did you? But they, for an entire week before an ordination ceremony, they accumulate so much merits every single day. And then on the last day, they transfer all that merit to who? For themselves. May by the power of all these merits, may I also... They give all that merit all the way to the newly ordained monks, blessing their journey to Nibbana. I mean, how amazing that is. Not only do they give alms for 7 days, they think, I have so much merit. What am I going to do with all this merit? Here. May these newly ordained monks, may they be blessed on their journey, and may they attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. I mean, that is a mindset that is beyond the world. It is a mindset that is so powerful. See, we have an ordination ceremony every, I'm guessing 3 months, three, four months. So it's not something that is like once in a blue moon. It's something that we have frequently, but every single time they get together and they do such an amazing deed. And it reminds me of the stories that we've heard of the time of the Buddha, the times where they're fulfilling their perfections, making the determination, all this. And every single time, it reminds me of how amazing this deed they do. How compassionate and how very consistent they do this. I don't know. Just imagine waking up at 12 midnight. Just to make alms, right? Literally 12 midnight, you wake up and you make alms. Entirely dedicating the entire 4 or 5 hours to make alms for the Mahasangha. Because what we have to understand is, then, because when you make alms, when you offer alms, we're not offering food. We've never offered food. What have we been offering? Because if it was food we're offering, well, the Mahasangha will consume it. Great. But we're not just giving food. What are we actually giving? What do our body use food for? Well, we know that, you know, the carbohydrates and stuff that we consume is all transferred into what? Energy. And this energy, when you offer it, you're offering it with the intention of, may this energy be used for what? Like, you know, in the precept, right? From dancing, singing, playing, acting, wearing and bearing ornaments, perfumes, and cosmetics. Is that what they use it for? No, they use it for one thing and one thing only. For the contemplation and for the spreading of this Dharma. Because by looking at these precepts, what you realize is these are things that are not focused towards what? Nibbana. This is why we observe the 8 precepts. This is why we observe the 10 precepts. This is why our monks, our high day monks, have the entire vinaya For one thing and one thing only, to aim us towards Nibbana. To make us understand what our path is. What should and shouldn't we be doing? So, when you're offering alms, you're offering energy. Energy, and you're saying, may you take this energy and may you use this for your contemplation. May you use this to spread the Dhamma, to do all these merit works, to help one another for the betterment of who? Of the entire world. The other day, I was able to see. I have a great fortune of being in the monastery, and therefore I get to see to be released videos. I get to see them beforehand, right? And I got to see a video of some of our very talented people at the monastery. And as you may all know, in our monastery, we're learning different languages, right? So Chinese, Japanese, German, French, Spanish, Korean, and the list goes on and on and on. I think we have, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I think we have around 11 languages. We're learning around 11 languages. Now, I remember going through school, we also had to learn language, right? It was compulsory to learn language. So I remember going through school, and for 3-4 years, all of us were trying to learn a single language for 3 years, approximately. After the 3 years, how many of us in the class will be fluent in the language or be able to speak their mind in a language was very rare. I think after the 3 years, most of them could answer some very simple questions, but that's it. But the residents at our monastery, the monks, Anagarikas, Anagarikas, they, in a very short amount of time, 1-2 years, I got to see a video of someone who was giving a sermon in Japanese, another one in Chinese, and there's another one, I can't remember which one that was. Another language. And as I was watching this, I just thought, how amazing. Now, I can only speak two languages, right? English, and I can barely, right? I won't call myself fluent, but I can speak in Sinhalese. And me seeing someone else learning a completely new language, something that was literally Greek to them a couple of years ago, and being able to preach in that language. See, this is why you offer alms. Because what are they going to do with this language? What are they going to do with this language? Okay, they're learning French. Why? To live in France? Right? To see the Eiffel Tower? To go visit the Mona Lisa? No, they have one thing and one thing on their mind. I'm learning this language to what? To spread the Dhamma to all these innocent, all these vulnerable, all of these minds that need help. You see, I think I am one of the most fortunate people on this earth to be surrounded by extraordinary people. Literally, I think a couple months back, I remember just sitting down and just thinking about how amazing the people around me are. How they're willing to sacrifice absolutely everything for anyone. Absolutely anything for anyone. The other day, so every Sunday we have a Dhamma school in the Royal Institute School. And there was, I remember in one sermon that our Nayakanth had done, one of the teachers came up and said, we have we have a student she's really anxious and she needs help. The Sunday after, the Naya Kahandar was told that there was a student that needs help. Guess who was there? Anagarikas, two of our Anagarikas, decided, you know, they were going to drop everything and decided to go to the school to talk to this one student. I mean, does that remind you of something? You know, 2,500 years ago, a certain individual will travel for miles and miles for just one person. Do you see, you know, that's the thing. I think I am one of the most fortunate, one of the most luckiest people on earth to be surrounded by such amazing people. Because it is this surrounding ourselves with these amazing people, these extraordinary people, which take us to where? Take us where? To the most extraordinary place. To the most extraordinary state. Because remember, last week the one advice that one of my teachers had given me was what? Don't attain Nibbana. Don't try to attain Nibbana. Even this week, I got the same advice. What? Don't go to the Valley Model. Don't go to the Buddha Puja. We have to question, was my teacher being genuine with me? Does my teacher really want me to attain Nibbana? If so, why would he say, don't attain Nibbana? Because it's about surrounding yourself with extraordinary people. Because one thing that we start to understand as we start to see minds, not just outside minds, but inside minds as well. So your own mind and other minds. What you realize is how impressionable they are. How easy it is for a mind to change. According to their what? According to the environment. Change the environment and the mind itself starts to change. The way they think starts to change. It's a very simple bit of logic. It's a very simple bit of logic because our minds, not just our minds, but minds in general, our minds of habit, they always look for a similar thing to do each and every time. That's why, you know, when you're at home, you don't get ideas about, you know, what you're going to or how you're going to do the best Buddha Puja. You can only do that once you're in that environment. For example, you know, think about before you got the Dhamma. The moment you enter home and you sit on the sofa, right? Sit on the couch. Didn't the TV automatically turn on? I mean, you don't remember pressing the button, but the button was pressed, the remote's in your hand. You're sitting back, laying down, and you're laying back and watching the TV. That came out of habit because that's something that you used to do all the time. Because our mind is always looking for the most familiar way out of things. So when you're in the environment with a sofa, with a TV, you sit down, you turn on, and you watch TV. Just like that, our mind is. And again, our mind is also something that changes according to who we associate. This is why they say, pay any price to be in the association of extraordinary people. Because what happens when you're in the presence of extraordinary people is that they influence you, whether you like it or not. For example, say there is someone who you associate who every single day will find at least 5 minutes to go into the Buddha shrine room and chant the Buddha Guna, Buddha Guna. Whether you like it or not, they rub that off you. They start rubbing it onto you. And then you start to do what? Huh. I can do 5 minutes. And now you start to go and start chanting the Buddha Guna for 5 minutes. That's because of how, that's because of the impression that they give you. The views they give you, they may not just say it. Because actions speak louder than words. They don't need to say anything. All they have to do is do. Because we can see. We can feel. We can perceive. And that itself is enough to change this. That's why if you're surrounded by people who aren't going to do what, if they don't have the same ideologies or have the same goals that you have, all they're doing is they're pulling you back. For example, if you have a goal of, say, a New Year's resolution of reducing the amount of chocolate you eat, if you are friends with a chocoholic, do you think it's going to be easy? You want to get rid of, you want to reduce the amount of chocolate that you consume, but yet your best friends with a chocoholic, someone who's addicted to chocolate, is it going to be easy? The question is it possible? It is possible. There's that 1% chance that, you know, even though your best friend loves chocolate, you can still refrain from eating chocolate. But that's a 1%. Actually, almost a 0.0001%. Because our environment is key. Our environment is what takes us towards our salvation. That's why being in the association, being in the presence of extraordinary people, people who are pushing you to your limit, that's what makes you improve. Because if we looked around, looked at examples of people who have done what they wanted to do, people who've made a difference in their life, you should look at who they associate. Because once you look at who they associate, now you realize, oh, that makes sense. Oh, I understand why they became who they became. For example, if we take simply a very famous individual, let's take Albert Einstein. Who was Albert Einstein's association? If I remember correctly, before his golden years, these years when he published, you know, these theories of relativity and all these amazing theories, I think a year or two before he did that, he used to work in a university. And he was able to get his hands on research papers. So at the very small age of maybe 20, 21, he was reading very advanced research papers and being in the association of professors and people who are very, very intelligent. Because of his associations, out came what? How came what? Albert Einstein. He was able in his golden years to wow the entire science community. All because of what? Because of what he did? Or because of his association? Even the Buddha, before he became the Buddha, while he was sitting under the Bodhi tree trying to attain Buddhahood, when Asatik Gautama was sitting under the Bodhi tree trying to attain Buddhahood, he also was affected by his associations. Now, association isn't just people. It is a mindset. Because what we have to remember is, before Asatik Gautama sat under this Bodhi tree, what he had done, He had associated some of the best teachers back in that time, who helped him get into these states of jhana. Not only that, he had an entire entire, almost you can say, force of his perfections that he tried to fulfill in his entire life behind him, pushing him forward. His perfections became his association. His wisdom became his association. And therefore, on Vesak full moon Poyade, right, many, many thousands of years ago, he sat under the Bodhi tree and he attained the Buddhahood. Thanks to his what? Association. That's why, don't attain Nibbana. Associate people who are trying to. Don't contemplate. Associate people who are contemplating. You know, to associate extraordinary people is, I think, one of the most difficult things on earth. Because it's not easy. It's never easy. Because they're doing things, saying things, and they're behaving in ways that you don't. They're doing things that you don't do. For example, every day they do this, right? Every day they go to the Valley Mall. Every day they chant Buddha Guna. Every day they go to the Buddha Puja. Right? They make offerings to the Buddha. They worship the Buddha before going to sleep. They do things that you don't do. And when this happens, you look at them and you realize, I don't do any of this. They may say, try doing this. But you can't, because it's not something that you usually do. Therefore, it creates a lot of friction. That's why I remember, you know, many, many years ago, Guru Ramananda gave a sermon about being a malleable bit of steel. I remember I had friends who was very, very interested in swords, right? Because he was a fanatic of swords and how to make swords. And so I remember him. He shows me loads of these videos. And when Guru Ramananda talked about, you know, become a manual bit of steel, do you realize what he's trying to say here? To make a sword, what do you need? A bit of steel. And what else? What else? What else do you need? You need a blacksmith. A blacksmith who knows what they're doing. What else do you need? You need a sledgehammer. You know, those massive hammers that weigh like a lot of weight. Small hammers. And more hammers. And so many other instruments that are used to take this piece of metal. Oh, don't forget the furnace, right? The furnace to actually melt it to make it more malleable. The blacksmith will look at a piece of metal, and the first thing the blacksmith will see in this metal is what? Is what this metal can become. See, a blacksmith can make this metal into anything. Anything the heart can desire. If he wants to make a sword, he can make a sword. If they want to make a table, they can make a table. But when they look at this piece of metal, they know what they want to make. They have the end goal in mind. Then what do? They take the metal, they put it into a furnace. They let it heat up. Just by heating, will the metal become sword? They take this metal out. They take their massive hammers. And they hit and hit and hit. They keep hitting this piece of metal on an anvil. They hit and hit and hit. The metal used to be this thick, now it's this thick. Then it becomes this thick. And then it becomes a couple of centimeters thick. And I remember, like, in this process of making swords, they make it this thick, and then they fold the metal like one and two times to make it again this thick, and then they hit, and they hit, and they hit, and then they fold. They keep doing this several times. Folding and shaping, and then folding and shaping and folding and shaping. Now, you know how you make wedding cakes? And you make the cake and you break it, and you make the cake again and you break it. Just like that, they're making a sword by folding and folding and folding. And then finally when the blacksmith is happy with it, they'll heat it up for one last time. Again, with extreme amount of heat. And then submerge it into either water or oil. Now, if this piece of metal was the thing, you know, I don't want anyone to hit me. Right? No one can say anything about me. No one can change me. This piece of metal will sit on the shelf of the blacksmith its entire life. Rust and become part of the earth. But once, if the metal is malleable, if the metal is willing to be shaped by the blacksmith, now it can become a sword that a great king, a great warrior can wear on his belt to be used. Only if the metal is malleable. If the metal isn't malleable, well, all the metal can do is what? Rust and degrade. See, this is the thing. When you're faced with extraordinary people, they are people who will try to mold you for as long as you're malleable. If you are malleable, they will mold you. They'll mold you into not just who you think you can become, but who they know that you can become. I remember someone telling me this story. And this is about if you've ever been on a plane, you come across this something called a crosswind, right? So it's a very strong wind that can change the direction of a plane, right? Winds can do that. And they're telling me a secret that all pilots do, but they don't tell about and they don't talk about. And that is, they always aim a place. So for example, if this is where they start, and this is where they want to go, they will never travel in a straight line. They will never travel in a straight line. Why is that? Because when the crosswinds hit, they're going to end up somewhere completely different. Think about it, right? 1 degree difference at takeoff becomes several thousand kilometers difference at landing. So they always will take an area which is slightly above, slightly on the left of their target. Now, this is how your teachers will see you. We should never see a person for who they are. You should always see a person of who they can be. Right? Because if you were to take a person, and if you see the person for who they are, because of the crosswind, they can only become who you think they will become. So, because of the crosswind, if this person was aiming here, they will always come here. But if you look at a person for who they could be, who they can be, now you're aiming here.
Now they'll become who? The best they can possibly be. They'll land on target. They will land on target. On who they want to be. This is why your teachers are people who are looking to see what is the potential that you can possibly give. The maximum you can possibly give. What is the best you can possibly do? And they'll help you push, they'll push you to that limit. For as long as you're what? Malleable. For as long as you're malleable, your teachers will push you to become the best you possibly can. But the moment you stop being malleable, the only thing your teacher can do is let the crosswind take you. See, your teachers, and not just your teachers, because when I talk about teachers, we're not talking about a certain individual. We're not talking about one person. We're talking about everyone here. We're talking about you yourself. Are you not a teacher? Are you not a teacher? Mothers, fathers are teachers to their what? Children. Friends are teachers to their friends. Brothers, sisters are teachers. The people you're surrounded with are your what? Teachers. And you are teachers to them. It's funny because in the monastery, we have a student-teacher relationship. So every single monk, every single Anagarika, and every single Anagarika, Sila Shravika, Sila Huasis, everyone who ever touches the monastery, right, has a personal teacher. A personal teacher, almost as a namesake. And why I say this is, a teacher and a student isn't a teacher and a student. They're both what? Students. Because a teacher can learn so much from who? Their so-called students. Because they are also what? A student. Their students are also what? A teacher. Now, this is the thing. Like I remember seeing this when I had the opportunity many, many, many months back to talk with some of our small noble heart children. Now, our noble heart children are how old? They're under 13, 6 to 13. And I got to talk to one of our, I think he's a 9-year-old. I was told to talk with him because, he had some questions he wanted to ask. So I said, okay, what are your questions? And we're having a conversation. And I think by the end of our conversation, he learned lots. But I think I learned more than he did. He showed me he's a 9-year-old. He showed me things. He showed me how he's consistent. He has a book. He has a book. I wish I could show it. I wish I could show you the book he had. And in this book, every single day, he would write one Dhamma point. And not just Dhamma. No. I'm sorry. A 9-year-old. A 9-year-old writing a Dhamma point. Right? Most likely, he probably goes to one of his teachers or one of the Roster monks or the Anagarikas or the Sita Shravikas and probably ask them for something. But every single day, would write one down. And not only that, would go around and ask someone to write down one thing they could change in their life. So for example, he showed me the book, right? And in his book, it said, like some of the things it said, it was like, when you wake up, you should say Teruvan Sannai. And I kid you not, after the sentence, the tick. There was a tick. after the sentence, there was a tick. What does that tick mean? What does that tick mean? That he does it. In the morning, tidy up your bed. Guess what was after that sentence? A tick. I think that was one really interesting one. I can't remember. There was one something that's really, really interesting. And that also had a tick. Because every single day, he would go to several people, not the same person, but different people, and ask them to write down a mistake that they make. And not only that, because it's very easy. It's very easy to go around and say, excuse me, do you see a mistake in me? And someone will tell you that, okay, you do this. But this is difficult. To say, I no longer make that mistake. I mean, teacher, student. Teacher, student. This is the thing. You can learn so much. So much. Because the people around you are your associations. They're the people who mold you. And you're the people who mold them. So some of your teachers may be monks. Some of your teachers may be anagarikas, anagarikas. But they are also students. The things that they hear you do, the things that they hear you say, it changes them. It molds them. It makes them take one step further. See, this is the blessing that we have to be in the association of extraordinary people. We are extremely lucky to have not just to have a teacher, but also to be able to teach. And it's only when you start to have the idea of, you know, I am also here to help other people. Do you see the true advantage of a teacher? It's only when you become a teacher, do you realize the value of a teacher? Because if you see everyone to be a mind that is destitute, a mind that is vulnerable, a mind that is naive to ignorance. If you see everyone to be a mind, you also see yourself to be a mind. Therefore, it's not how can I help myself? It's more how can I help everyone? It's no longer, if you see everyone to be a mind, it's no longer what can I do to make myself look good? It's more what can I do to help everyone? See, the journey to Nirvana is turning I to we. And then we to all. Our journey to Nirvana is turning I to we to all. All / none. Both. Our journey to Nirvana starts with I. What am I going to do for my Nirvana? How am I supposed to help myself? Right? I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. It turns I. And as we progress on the path, I turns to we. How can we attain Nirvana? How can I help these people? And how can I help him and her? And how can I help these? How can we attain Nirvana? And then it turns from we to all. / none. Because then you no longer think about I or we. You think about minds. You don't think about people anymore. You think about minds.
You think about other, you think about not just other minds, you think about minds. Whose minds? Question's wrong. Minds. This is basically, this is how we feel. First we think about I. How can I attain Nibbana? Then it's how can we attain Nibbana? Then how can we, how can all minds attain Nibbana? See, a mindset of an arahant isn't just, is a mindset that no longer focuses on what? I. Because why? The mind no longer feels this sense of me, I, self. But it still feels what? There are minds. There are minds. That's why they will always have compassion towards all sentient beings. Because it's the mind that they're trying to help. It's no, it's not people, it's minds. See, if you don't see others to be minds, you see them to be people. What happens is you now have someone to compare with. You know, in our lives, right? Don't we have people that we really like? You remember going to school, right? You know, you had your friends, then you had your best friends, and then you had your best friends. But when you have friends, who do you also have? Enemies, arch enemies, and very arch enemies. Because when you see people, now there are people that you like, but when you have people you like, there are also people that you don't like. That's because you see what? People. That's because you see what? People. There are friends, there are best friends, there are best friends. No, that's not how you say it, right? It's best friends forever, BFF, there we go. And then you have enemies and arch enemies and very arch enemies, right? That's because we used to see people. That's why now you can no longer feel compassion or feel kind towards everyone. That's why there'll be people that you can't feel kind towards. You know, this person is really rude to me. How can I feel kind to them? Because why? You have people you like and people you don't like. But if you see just minds, if you were able to see just minds, which mind is a best friend? Which mind is a friend? Which mind is an enemy? You can no longer feel an enemy. Because if you see people, now you can't practice noble metta. May I and all beings in all worlds accept my enemy and my arch enemies, my very arch enemies, but especially my friends, my best friends, and my best friend forever. May they be free from the fires of samsara. That's how we feel. Because you can't practice noble metta if you have best friends, if you have enemies. Because you now have a preference. You know, I don't like Bob. Therefore, I may everyone but Bob be happy. I like this person. Therefore, I want this person to be happy. This is why, you know, we have our like judgments. We have certain feelings for different people. So this is saying that, you know, I like this person, I don't like this person. And therefore we have this feeling that I have to help the people that I like. I have to help the people that I like. I don't really need to help the people I don't like.
And that's what we get because of this idea of people. But there was never a person there in the beginning. What was there in the beginning? Well, not in the beginning. Well, what is there? A mind and a body. What's a friend? A mind and a body. What's a best friend? A mind and a body. What's a best friend forever? A mind and a body. An enemy? A mind and a body. An arch enemy? A mind and a body. A very arch enemy? A mind and a body. They are all just what? Minds and bodies. What is the difference between the minds? What is the difference between the minds? Something that's very interesting to think about is what happens if we are able to change two memories? What happens if we're able to change memories? Change two people's strings of memories. Because we're very, very easy. It's very easy to say, you know, I like A, don't like B. I like A because they're nice. I don't like B because, you know, they're a bit rude, right? A likes the things that I like. B is always, you know, really grumpy. Now, we think that these are attributes of what? Of A. You know, being nice, being kind, being generous is attributes of A. A is always like this. B is always rude. B is always mean. B is always grumpy. We think them to be attributes of A and B. But if we took a scenario, right, somehow, right, I don't know if it's possible. I don't think it's possible. But somehow, if we were able to take B's memories and put into A, take A's memories and put into B, we change nothing but the memories. Now, who would act kind and compassionate? A or B? Now, who's going to be grumpy all the time? A or B? Well, now, person A has the body of A, but will start acting like what? B. Person B will have the body of B, but will start acting like person A. So now person A, body of person A, right? Person A was now really grumpy. Do you like that now? No. Person B is very kind and compassionate. Do we like them now? Yes. So do we like a person for who they are? Or do we like a person for what sort of feeling they give you? We like a person for what the feeling that they give us. It doesn't matter whether they're A or B. If A starts to act like B and B starts to act like A, we start liking B and not liking A. And all we did was just switch memories. All we did was switch memories. Now they behave in completely different ways. So if you hate B, you don't hate B. What do you hate? The B's what? Memories. You don't hate A. You don't love A. You love A's what? Memories. So, who is better, A or B? Who is nicer, A or B? Who is rude, A or B? Neither. It is what? Memories. All we can do is stop blaming memories. You don't like B, blame its memories. You like A, blame its, don't blame, but like his or her memories, like their memories. it's a very, very, it's, when you start thinking about this, now there's no one that you can actually not like. Because, well, we have to remember that every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. Which means what? Every mind is innocent. Every mind is vulnerable. It's subject to change. So how can you have a best friend and have an arch enemy? Where does that come from? Do you like your best friend's body or mind? Do you like your arch enemy? Do you not like your arch enemy's body or mind? Oh, sorry, body or memories? A's body or memories? We can't hate memories. We can't dislike memories. Because we understand that memories aren't something that we choose. Memories are stuff, are things that happen. All that memories are just recalling what has happened. So, how can we hate one person and love another? How can we have a best friend and a worst enemy? When you understand that there is no one here that I don't like, but memories. Memories, or in other words, it's not just memories. It's memories with what? With views, with ignorance. Because now there is no one that you hate. Except what? Your enemy, your true enemy. What's that? Ignorance. So we're turning from I to we to all. Now you can no longer have a, because if you see everyone to be just a mind and a body, you can no longer love one person and hate the other. You no longer want this person to be happy and not want this person to be happy. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to treat everyone the same. For example, you're not going to treat a 3-year-old the same way you treat a 50-year-old. They have different ways to be treated, right? This is why you don't treat someone who's shouting the same way you treat someone who is doing a merit activity. You treat them the way they need to be treated, but you don't feel what? I don't like this, but I like this. It is entirely, see, it's all we're trying to do is see the world as it truly is. We're not doing anything but trying to see the world as it truly is. Now, I was talking to one of our Anagarikas the other day, and they're telling me, you know, like, you know, his teachers, right? His teachers will not, you know, will do whatever they can, right? What would not let a beat pass without contemplating. And so his question was, well, a beat? They won't let a beat pass. Is that possible? To be contemplating almost 24 hours? Now, it's a question that we can all have. Contemplation, right? You know, contemplating a Dhamma. Is that something that we all... Is it something that we all have to do all the time? The reason why we feel that, you know, is contemplation something that we have to do all the time? The reason why we feel that is because we feel that contemplation is extra. What I mean, it's like this, right? We think we have life plus one. That one being contemplation. It seems so artificial, you know, life, normal life plus one, contemplation. So it seems as though, you know, that's not like, you can't do that. We can't do that all the time, you know. Contemplation, it's not something that I can do all the time. But contemplation isn't a plus one. The contemplation isn't something extra that you do. Contemplation is simply, the way I think of it, it's simply like a switch. You know, I think of it more to be like a breaker. You know the breakers on you know our fuse boards. When something fuses, it trips. I think contemplation to me more like a breaker. Why? Because you have the box, and you have the. Okay, this is let me get this right. This is the breaker. It's an amazing drawing. Do you want me to label this? This is, no. Every time you contemplate, we're flipping this on. By flipping this on, we're not adding one. All we're doing is we're changing how we see life. Unfortunately, somewhere on the line, there is a short connection. Therefore, what happens? So what do? Right? We turn it and flick it back on. And then what happens? After a while, it turns off. Flip on, turn off. Flip on, turn off. We feel the flipping on part to be that plus one. You know, I have to go and flip it on. You know, it's something that I have to do artificially. But once you've flipped it on, the circuit will run for a certain time. Will run for a certain time. So it's not life plus one. Contemplation is not a plus one. Instead, it's a different way we see life. It's almost like a different lens. Unfortunately, lens changes every time this switches on or off. This is why your teachers are able to contemplate for longer and long, long amount of time. Right? A teacher won't miss a beat, they say. Because they've turned it on and their circuit isn't shorted. It hasn't been short-circuited. Right? There's not a short in the circuit. Or there might be, but it's not so significant that it's going to flip the switch off or trip the trip. Right? Trip the breaker. The circuit breaker. It's not enough to trip it. So this is the thing. This is something that, you see, the journey to Nibbana isn't something that is impossible. Isn't something that's a fantasy. It is something that is a very, very simple path. Simple in theory, but the actual practice of it, the actual putting the switch on is difficult. Only because we haven't done this in samsara. In our entire samsara, we haven't done it. Not yet, anyway. Therefore, it's something that we find very difficult to do. However, the things that we find difficult, it's only difficult until we start doing it. Those of you who can ride a bike, right? Ride a normal bike. A bicycle. You know that the actual ride. Think about this, right? Imagine learning to ride a bike in theory. How difficult do you think that is? A bike? Riding a bicycle? You have to balance. You're on two wheels, not four. You have to balance. You have to be aware of the brakes. Right? How fast are you going to pedal? How close are you going to turn? In theory, it's very difficult. And as you start doing it, well, what's going to happen? You're going to fall over and over again. However, just like the switch, you get on, you fall off. You get on, you fall off. You get on, you fall off. However, every time you flip the switch on, falling off is delayed. Because you have now more practice. You can now practice, you have now a bit more practice. Therefore, it switches off maybe after 5 minutes now, 10 minutes now. Now, someone could try pushing you off your bicycle and you won't fall. Why is that? Because you're able to keep this switch on. So this is the thing, what we have to do is contemplate. Keep on contemplating. Today, tomorrow, the day after. It's not a plus one. Instead, you're seeing the world as it truly is. You're trying to uncondition yourself or recondition yourself into thinking the way that is really there, what is really happening. Seeing the world as it truly is. Because once you realize the world as it truly is, are you able to free yourself from these shackles? Are you able to free yourself from these shackles that hold you down, which the shackles that give you friends and enemies? Now, don't worry. By understanding this, this doesn't mean you lose your friends. There are so many people out there that are very scared of understanding the truth. Why? Because if I understand the truth, will I no longer have a friend? Will I no longer be able to eat chocolate? Trust me, I've met a person who was scared to listen to the Dhamma because they're scared they will no longer be able to eat chocolate. And I'm not even lying to you. For some reason, chocolate is something that people are willing to have more than understanding reality. Right? Because they want chocolate. Right? Will I no longer be able to enjoy eating chocolate? Will I no longer be able to go to my favorite theme park? Will I no longer be able to do this, go to parties, go to this? But understanding this doesn't mean any of this is gone. Honestly, understanding this doesn't mean you no longer have a friend or have best friends. Instead, the entire world becomes what? The entire world becomes a friend. You may lose the sense of having, you know, one, two good friends, but now you have millions and billions of what? Friends. You no longer have one, now you have lots. All for what? All because you understood that it's a mind we're talking about. Doesn't mean everyone becomes an enemy now, right? Because if everyone becomes a friend, can't everyone become an enemy as well? You know, the thought comes, right? If someone who's practicing the path sees these both to be minds, why do they feel love and compassion? Because they're both just minds. Can't they just like ignore both minds and just leave? Or very simply, you know, there is no person here. So can't someone who understands that go around like massacring millions of people, like, you know, committing genocide? Because there's no people. Just a mind and a body. It's a question that can come up in your mind. The way you have to think about this is that for us to understand this, our mind has to have what? See, the plant of Dhamma can only grow on the fertile land of what? Of merits, of qualities, of good qualities, virtues. This is why you'll never see anyone, you'll never have enemies. Because this can only grow, the understanding of Dhamma can only grow on the fertile land of virtues. Only if your land, if your land is virtuous and meritorious, this fertile land, can this grow. If your land isn't fertile, if you threw a seed onto a stone or onto a rock, will the plant ever grow? It needs perfect land to grow. This is why we have to. This is why you don't need to attain nibbana. If you want to attain nibbana, don't. Oh my God! Don't attain nibbana. No, you don't need to. Stay in the association of extraordinary people. Stay, because what we have to remember is everything that happens around you happens according to your vipaka. Everything that happens around you is happening according to your what? To your vipaka. So the people who you associate are the people who have come to you due to your vipaka. Now you can say, shouldn't I just accept vipaka? And just be with the... Say you have a group, you're in a group of not so virtuous people. That's my vipaka. What should I do about that? I'm going to have to stay with these people. They came because of vipaka. However, you're hearing this because of what as well? Vipaka. The idea, should I change my associations, come because of what? Vipaka. Maybe I shouldn't be associating this group of people, came because of vipaka. So these ideas that you get are also what? Vipaka. The people you associate is also what? Vipaka. However, we have to be able to think. This is why your teachers, and thanks to our good karma, we have teachers who have created a system for us, almost as though they've made a skeleton. Using this skeleton, or using this cake, you can put the icing. But there's no point of having icing without having what? The cake. I don't know. Have you ever had icing by itself? Anyone had icing by themselves? I remember growing up, I used to be a sugar addict. And I remember whenever they had cake, I'd always have tried to find, try to take some icing, right? And once Amma got sick of it so much that she scraped off all the icing off a cake and gave it to me. It's like, here, take it all. That day, I understood the value of cake. Because you need cake to have icing. Without cake, icing is just sugar. Even at this moment, there are some of you thinking, why did they invent icing? Icing ruins the flavor of cake. But the thing is that you have to have a cake first. That's why your teachers have given a system. Now, this system isn't iron hard, meaning it's not something that you have to follow to the letter. But this is a basic background, a basic backbone for you to understand, what should I be doing? What do I need to do to attain my salvation? That's why for our Sila Shravakas, Shravakas, Anagarikas, Anagarikas, and monks, our teachers have given us what? Meritorious activities. What for? I don't need to do any merits, you know, through my entire samsara. I've offered to many, many thousands of Buddhas, you know, I have enough. I don't need any merits. No, merits are essential. If someone was to ask me, right, or if someone was to ask anyone, what do they need? What do they need to attain Nibbana? What is a simple, what is the one thing they need to attain nibbana? The one answer that myself and I know most of the monks, Anagarikas, Anagarikas, and all of you would say is the merits. Like I said, I was able to, I get to watch some of our videos before they're released to the general public. So I got to see, I won't ruin any videos for you because, you know, we're not spoiling anything. But I got to see some of our honor guard, because like they're talking about their lay life. And not only that, like, but I was talking to some of our monks as well. And you realize how meritorious they have been. I'll tell you one story, but you'll hear the story as well. You'll hear the story on the ordination day, which is next week, before I forget. So the mother, the father, and I think he has a younger brother. Well, they're people who frequent the monastery. They come and go, right, every Saturday and Sunday. And because of this, this certain individual was forced to come. Was literally forced to come with them. And then they were forced to join the Dakshinaya programs. However, whenever they did whatever the merit they were doing, they did it with their whole heart. Within several months, you know, he had the idea, you know, what happens if I stay for a week? You know, I might just, you know, Amma, can I come and stay in the monastery for a week? Just 1 week. 1 week's enough. And then I can go back to my friends and whatnot. Just 1 week. And that week still hasn't ended. Well, technically, it'll end next week, technically. But that week hasn't ended yet. And it's been an entire year. And that's because of what? Because of what? The merit power. The power of these merits that he had done. I had the fortune of talking to all these monks, Anagarikas, and they tell me the stories of their past, of how much merits they had to do to get to where they are now. And not only that, like, you can see the monastery, right? This is the blood, sweat, and tears of our devotees, as well as all those people, all the people who've helped. All of this is merits. All of this is merits that are taking them onto this path. You know, you'll see that there are people who used to have audiences of thousands of people, you know, who would stand in front of a stage and talk about their lives in front of thousands of people in other countries. And they also, thanks to the merits they've accumulated, also have come. All thanks to merits. So that's the thing. Your teachers have given you a backbone. Tell me to follow. So your teachers will give you merit work. Now, something that I know our teachers are very good at is to identify the things that the best merit work for you. What I mean is, for our Anagarikas, I know this very, very well, is that if they think you're gonna become very, very attached to a certain meritorious activity, they won't give it to you. Yet. So the moment you come, they realize, okay, this person would like to do these sort of works. Let's give him something a bit different. Sometimes something completely opposite. So I know for one of our Anagarikas, he used to work, and he used to be really good at physical work, right? And I think he's also told his teachers, you know, I found like I really want to help with this, you know, with the construction work. And guess where he was put? To put flowers into a bouquet. Because your teachers are someone who will look at every single detail. don't worry. After maybe, I think, 2 or 3 weeks, he was given, after understanding, you know, merit is, what merit truly is, he was given the chance to do other meritorious activities. But this is the thing, your teachers are people who are very observant, who want the best for you. Right? So they'll give you, they'll make a structure for you. That's why we have, you know, the Budugan Sajjayana. To get rid of all the Aryopwadas that we've done throughout our entire samsara. You can just say that, no, all I'm doing is sitting down or standing up and with a string in my hands and just chanting, Iti Piso Bhagava Arahanta. But it's not just that. There's a reason behind that. And as most of you all know, that we have now an Aryamaitri Sajjayana, right? Where you're chanting the Aryamaitri. And again, these are very meritorious deeds, but not just meritorious deeds. There are reasons why we do that. There are reasons why we have a Buddha Puja every day, in the morning, in the evening, at noon. There are reasons. This is why your teachers have made an amazing system, which keeps us on that path to Nibbana. And something that I'd like to share with all of you as well. Something that I thought to be really interesting is, now, there are people that you find to be extraordinary. Right? So some people that you know are very good, very, very virtuous. And people, if you know that, if you associate, you will go further on your journey. However, you also know not everyone's like that. Not everyone is the same. Not everyone is as virtuous as they are. So, one amazing piece of advice that our teacher that I think Guru Hanuman had given us, is that associate extraordinary people. Associate Kalyana Mitras and talk with everyone else. Associate Kalyana Mitras, but talk with everyone else. Now, at first glance, it's very confusing. Talk with everyone else, but associate. What's the difference? The difference is, when you're with these Kalyana Mitras, when you're with these extraordinary people, associate them. Take their good qualities. Take everything you possibly can from them. But those who you don't think to be extraordinary, or people who aren't as... people who you may know, who may think not to be such good association, talk with them. Talk with them, but do not associate them. So you'll talk with them just like normal. However, you're aware, I'm not going to take any of their, I'm not going to take any views. I'm just here to, I'm just conversing as normal. So talk, but don't associate. For Kalyana Mitras, for these extraordinary people, associate. Literally, you know, give yourself away. Give yourself away and be in the association of these people, no matter how hard it is. For example, right, we may not be able to associate Guru Handru every single day, right? But how can we associate Guru Hanuman? We may not be able to associate Nayakandra every single day. But how can we associate Nayakandra? See, we may not be able to associate them, body-wise. But we're able to associate who they are through the talks that they give. Because I've had this question, because my teachers continue to tell me, you know, associate these sort of people, associate Guru Nanda, associate Nayakan, associate all these are great people. But I always ask them, well, it's not just me, but everyone is trying to associate them. How can I associate them? They only have 24 hours a day. If there was a 25th hour, I know they'll give to me. But there's only 24 hours a day. How can I associate them? And my teacher said, you don't need to associate them, but associate their teachings. Listen to their talks. Listen to their teachings. Practice their teachings. That is association. That is association. We may not be able to talk with Guru Ramdas, but his sermons are us associating him. Take as much as you possibly can from those. You may not be able to associate Nayankandru, right? But still, listen to his sermons. Listen to his talks. Because that itself is association. Because I know that Guru Ramdas and all of our monks, they give very valuable pieces of advice. Very valuable. But we never try to take it. Literally, if I had a book of every advice that my teachers have given me, I could probably fill probably like a 300-page book. But if you asked me how many of these things have I actually completed, can actually tick? Questionable, isn't it? Unlike the noble hearts, who has a book with ticks on every single line. That's the thing, we have to associate these amazing people. Associate the extraordinary. Don't try to associate people who are better, who you think are people who are advantageous. Even though they may be, you know, younger, they may be more, you know, more, let's say, inferior to you. Because don't let ego get in the way. In my eyes, ego is one of the most, it is, for me at least, right? In my eyes, ego is the one thing that's stopping you from actually taking steps forward to Nibbana. Ego is one of, is the things that actually stops you from taking steps forward. Because ego can creep in every nook and cranny of your mind. So if you really, really, really want to attain Nibbana, put your ego to the side and find these people. What would these people think about me if I do this? Put your ego to the side and follow. What happens if they start scolding me? Put your ego to the side and follow. Associate. Your ego is one of the things that stops you from attaining Nibbana. Because, you know, I am important. I have to be me. I have to be recognized. I have to be loved. I have to be, everyone should like me. Everyone should respect me. No one can tell me off. We have that inside of us. Put that to a side. Coming on to the topic of ego, very briefly, I remember an advice that my teachers had given me. When it comes to ego, do the opposite of ego. Whatever ego says, do the complete opposite. If ego says to stand up, you sit down. If ego says sit down, you stand up. If ego says say you're walking past and you see a group of young children, they're talking about Dhamma. If your ego says don't listen to them, what should you do? Go sit down and listen. If you see a piece of paper on the floor and your ego says you're not supposed to pick it up, what should you do? Pick it up. Because what you're doing, you're going up opposite ego, which gives your mind what? When you do something opposite to what the mind wants to do, what does the mind feel? What does the mind feel? Vexation. Only when we feel vexation do we remember to do what? Do we remember to do what? Contemplate. Because it's only when the mind is under pressure do we think, huh, I'm under pressure. I don't like this. How should I get out of this? By contemplating. That's why we rarely start contemplating on moments that make us happy. We don't contemplate on our friends, we contemplate on our enemies. We don't contemplate on chocolate, we contemplate on karuvila. Right? We don't contemplate on flowers, we contemplate on rotting fruit. I don't know. We contemplate on things that give us pressure more than that gives us pleasure. Yes, we should be contemplating on both, but we can use that to our advantage. See, what we're doing here is we're trying to take everything and use it to our advantage, right? We want to be pushed towards Nibbana. So if we contemplate only when we're having pressure, what should we do? Give ourselves more pressure. That's why, you know, Kanti Paramantapo Dekka. What does Kanti mean? Patience. However, the Buddha didn't say Kanti and that's it. Tapo Dekka. While you're resisting, while you're patient, remove, get rid. Because once you're patient, do you see the fires start to emerge? Then you remember, if I have fires, I have the water of Dhamma, let me spill the water. See, Kanti Paramanta. See, the Buddha's Dhamma, the more and more we talk about the Buddha's Dhamma is the most perfect teachings I have ever talked about. I have ever understood. In science, everything is connected, but there are always loopholes. In science, everything you can connect, you can try connecting all theories together. However, you will always find loopholes. That's why currently scientists are going crazy over quantum physics, because nothing that they know really works at small levels. That's why they're trying to find the theory of everything. The theory of quantum physics will probably be the theory of everything. But the Buddha's Dhamma, it's perfect in the beginning, middle, and end. No matter what sutra you take, you can find a connection to another one. I think of it to be the most connected web of Dhamma. Any sutra you can take and you can join with others, and they all join so perfectly. Of course. Because why? It was given by who? The perfect one. The other thing, contemplate. Right? Use the Dhamma that you've understood, you know. Whatever you've understood, however you've understood it, use it. Use it in your day-to-day life. Use it in morning, noon, and afternoon and night and whenever you possibly can, use it. Because only once you use it, are you able to feel the difference. Because knowing this in theory is all good and great. Oh, good. Oh, wow. A, B. Oh, people. Switch. Oh, great. I understood that. But there's no point of understanding that if you don't put it into practice. Practice, practice, and practice. Put this into your day-to-day life. Remember, all I'm giving you is what? All I'm giving is what? Views. You can't practice. Don't try to practice because you can't practice. Practicing will happen for as long as you're in the association. So if you're not associating extraordinary people, start. If you know you're associating people that aren't helping you attain to get where you want to be, talk with them. Don't associate them. But associate. Once you associate, this all happens. This all will happen only if you associate. Right, so Next week, the English Summit will not be held next week because we have our amazing ordination ceremony, which is an invitation to all of you, right? Well, technically, you don't have choices, right? Every week I tell you this, you don't have a choice, you have to come. But those of you who do have a choice, please do come. I mean, it is. You know, every ordination ceremony, something that I do, and I know all the monks do, is at that moment, reordain in our minds, not physically, in our minds. Because it really shows us, or it really reminds us of why we took monkhood in the first place. Now, most of you may not be a monk or become a monk, but you can become a monk in the mind. For example, you're wearing a patkara, you're wearing a seal cloth. That is your robes. That is your robes. So when you see, you know, these people come up with robes in their hand and say, "Sabba dukkha nisarana, nibbana sacchikarnat," in your mind you should also think, okay, I'm wearing this for one thing and one thing only. To what? To eradicate all suffering. This is why I want to don these robes. In your mind, think that. And not only that, think, you know, the people who are ordaining, may they get rid of their suffering. Sabba dukkha nisarana. Because, you know, they say the blessing of a mother and father is one of the most powerful blessings on earth. It's one of the most powerful blessings on earth. Do you know a blessing that's more powerful than the blessing of a mother and father? Do you know a blessing more powerful than the blessing of a mother and father? The blessing of? Blessing of? All of you. The Mahasangha. Bhikkhu bhikkhuni, upasaka upasaka. That's why we are all there. We are all there, sat down, watching everything unfold in front of our eyes, blessing them on their path to their liberation. Seeing them shed their white garments and don these amazing flags that remind us of the Buddha and the great Arahants. This is why we are so fortunate to be able to watch such things. This is why every time you watch an ordination ceremony, take the firm determination, I'm donning my robes for this. Yeah, and when you get to see their bandukarma. So we're having a bandukarma somewhere this week, where these anagarikas will shave their heads, one of our monks will shave their heads for them, getting them, preparing them for monkhood. When that happens, in your mind, just imagine your connections to your lay life being shed away as well. Because even as a Sila Shravaka, Shravika, Siluvasi, there are still things that connect us to the feeling of a lay life. Shed those. You know, they say burn bridges. Burn all the bridges that you feel towards lay life. When you get to see this happen. Right? Because it's an ordinary ceremony is one of the most meritorious ceremonies you'll have. They say a Khatna Pingama, right? A Khatna ceremony is very meritorious. For me, an ordinary ceremony is way more. Yes, a Khatna ceremony, you're offering a Khatna cloth to the Mahasangha, and they can wear a robe. But that's not the same as giving birth to newly ordained monks, or seeing the birth of newly ordained monks. Because at that moment, it is almost like they die, or their lay self dies, and just like a phoenix rises from its ashes, like a beautiful red phoenix rises from the ashes, these anagarikas will become monks. And again, it's not monkhood, isn't about having a robe and a bald head. You'll hear everyone say this. It's not that, it's a mindset. So basically for them, it's no different. It's just a ceremony, because already they're a monk in their minds. That's why our anagarikas, they don't need a robe and a bald head, because they have monkhood, they have the monk mindset. They have the monk mindset. They don't need it. So I know for some of anagarikas, it's just a change of costume, because they already have what? The monk mindset. That's what we all should have. The monastic or the monastic mindset. But again, witnessing an ordinary ceremony is very meritorious. So while that unfolds in front of us, like really, really, truly bless these individuals. I think there was a discussion whether we're gonna break into 2 days, because 17 is a lot, right? But eventually we thought, you know, 17, we could fit that all into 1 day. 17 individuals. This, like I said, this is one of the largest ordination ceremonies we're having at the monastery. 17. And so bless all 17 of them from the very bottom of your heart. May these 17 people, may these 17 anagarikas, may they be able to, by the power of the merits that we've all accumulated, may they be able to fulfill their monkhood and attain the supremacy in Nirvana. That's the feeling that you should have throughout the entire ordination ceremony. Like, you know how Yasodhara, when Prince Siddhartha left the palace, do you remember the damnation that she makes? When she finds out that her husband is gone to become an ascetic, the determination that she made is what? May he not remember us. I mean, may he not remember us? A wife saying that to her husband, making the determination, may he not remember me. May he be able to fulfill his, may he be able to complete his journey and not remember me. Not remember me or his son. I'll take care of this over here. Let him complete his journey. This is the Buddhist asana. This is the only place this sort of things happen. So make the determination. May, by the power of his merits, may they forget, may they not see any pleasures of the lay life. May they complete their journey and become one of the great arahants. May they become an arahant and may they walk on this earth. See, this is the Buddha Sasana we're talking about. In its flesh. It's something that, you know, it's not there forever. I think it's something that we came to forget. That it's not, Buddha Sasana is not there forever. We only have a very limited time left, 2,500 years, which is basically almost 25 more generations. And then we have nothing. Now, then we have not a single Buddhism or the Buddha's teaching, forget Buddhism, but the Buddha's teaching will vanish off the face of the earth. So we're very fortunate to be alive in a time where the teachings are being shown and the reality is coming very apparent to us. We're very fortunate. So please, if you have an opportunity, do come to the monastery. I think we are live streaming it, I think. Are we? We are live streaming for our viewers who are unable to come. So those of you who are not able to come, who are online, you can bless them with your entire heart. And I do think we're going to have comparing in Sinhala and English for our English viewers. And I think we have Tamil as well this time. We're trying to get everyone involved.
Because this ordination ceremony isn't just for 17 people. It's for 8.5 billion people. Long live the son of the Sasana, right? All right. Let's take a few moments to transfer our merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a moment to transfer all the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listen Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today, so first and foremost. Let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of this Lord Buddha's teachings, and with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time in memorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down through generation of noble lineage in the form of Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer the merits we require to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all of the chief plates of the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to no path and committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's also take a moment to transfer the merits to Gurus and Nansi, as well as the monks at the monastery, as well as Anagarikas, Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who made great effort to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be that by transliterating sermons, sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them, may the power of merits. If any of them have been born in the world of plane, may they redeem them themselves and be born in this plane. May the power of merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits that we require to our devotees, friends of the monastery who forsake our merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, alms, robes, medicines, as well as those who pass on the know-how, extend their well wishes. May the power of these merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers, sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our friends, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, and to all those who helped us, support us, assist us in shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed in physical and mental ailments. May they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So we're taking one chance of merits to the devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as numerous Gautam deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our garden deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those who have been friends and family to us in the long, infinite long journey in Sansara, to all those who have helped us, support us, assist us in any way they could. Let's take a moment to transfer these merits. So take a moment to transfer these merits to the members of the armed forces as well as police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost life in the war be the friend of foe. Rejoice in the merits required today. Let's also try and commend and transfer merits to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, and rank ourselves among them, we those who have been friends and family to us in the long journey of Sansara. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to them. May the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the world of plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble path, and attain supreme bliss in Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, the sole resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits acquired throughout the day, we've been a witness to the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat Nuances or Arhat Mahin Nuances in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success, become an Arhat Nuance or an Arhat Mahin Nuance in this very life, in the era of the Gautama, Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessing of Neva Chipuchem be with you all. The Mahasangha will now transfer the blessings to you. Raga ginnin mhidetnva Dvesha ginnin mhidetnva Moha ginnin mhidetnva
Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva. Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva. Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo. Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva. Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva. Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva. Raga ghini niveva, dvesha ghini niveva, moha ghini niveva, nivan sapa labeva, nivan sapa labeva. Nivan sapa labeva. Tunnandi, Susianatam Hagnibang. See you, Loka, see you, Satyam. Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva.